Okay. Thank you so much for coming back. You didn't just come for the cake, did you? You came to hear a gentleman by the name of Chuck K. Is that right? And he's a gentleman that we don't really need to introduce because I actually met him here at this meeting late 2010. Midnight, 2010. And we got to hanging around, and I just found out what a solid program this young man had. And he's young. If I look young, this guy's younger. And I was just really impressed by him. And I've learned a lot from him, and we get to call each other. And so Evan asked Chuck to speak. He visits us from Woodland Hills, California. The West Valley. So Chuck, 6'3", 250, Chuck K.
Hey.
True. All right. Hi, my name's Chuck. You guys hear me if I'm right here? Is this all right? Yeah, can you hear me when I'm like right here? Or do I need to take this thing and move it? Can I just hold this? You can hear me now, though? All right, cool. So, yeah, thanks for having me here to speak. When I first moved to L.A. in 2010, this was my home group for a while, and I miss this room. I feel like, for me, this is an important meeting, you know, for a lot of reasons, which I'll go into, but it's really good to be back, and I feel really supported by this meeting. Even when I'm not here, I feel supported by this meeting. It's been good to stay in touch with Chris, too, and just, like, you know, remember I belong. So thanks to Evan for asking me to speak. And, yeah, I got to, like, work on my pacing for 45 minutes. So I'm going to, like, slow it down and breathe a little more than I'm used to. I grew up in an alcoholic home. My dad's an alcoholic, and I think both my granddads are alcoholics, and a lot of my uncles are alcoholics. It seems like a lot of the men in my family, you know, this is the, like, booze is their solution. It seems like that's where a lot of the solution is in my family, is it's in a bottle. So yeah, I kind of want to talk about just what it was like when I was a kid. I didn't get into the rooms for a while, and I know enough about myself now to know that, you know, I'm really sensitive, and I try not to show that a lot of the day, you know. But when I come into the rooms, I stop pretending like I'm not. I'm not just sensitive, I'm really sensitive. So when I was a kid, you know, the hardest thing for me to deal with was just the fighting. There was a lot of fighting, and I couldn't ignore it, and it really upset me. And I had, like, I would just be sick to the stomach a lot of the time. And I was physically ill a lot. You know, some of that was not related to this disease, but some of it, I think, certainly was related to this disease. It's like, how do you carry grief, and how do you carry the pain that your parents have been carrying, that they're handing down to you? How do you carry it? I think you carry it in your body to some extent. I think that was part of the reason I was a sick kid. So, you know, when I was a kid, I was, you know, bright and smart and funny, and people, I had a lot of people that, like, were attracted to me, like a lot of guys and a lot of girls too. Like, I made friends, I think, pretty easily. I think I attracted people. And that's nice. That's a gift, you know. It's a good thing. But it was a lot. You know, when I was a kid, there was a lot coming at me, and I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know why my parents were fighting, and they didn't really know why they were fighting either, you know, because there's a lot of denial in this disease. So I didn't know, you know. I didn't know what was going on, but I knew I couldn't really just keep hanging in there. And I couldn't ignore it. I have an older sister who is not in the rooms. I'm not sure she needs to be in the rooms. But, you know, she kind of ignored it and just would be, she would go to the other end of the house. When they were fighting, she would go off to the other end of the house and, like, play with dolls. And it just didn't, I don't know, it didn't seem to, like, affect her the way it did with me. And I was real little. Like, when I was, like, three or four, you know, my parents were fighting, and my mom is in Al-Anon, so she's shared, and I've heard her share, and she talked about how when that was going on, I would walk in, during their fights, like when I heard them fighting, I would walk into the room and I would watch. And I would want to like see what was going on. I would just like stand there and like look up at them fighting, you know. And, you know, in some ways I know exactly what that felt like because I feel that a lot in my life. I feel that kind of like, you know, it's like you're standing there. You can't believe what's happening. Like the two people I love the most, the two people I need the most are angry at each other, you know, and they're like attacking each other. And I don't know why it's happening. And I know I need both of them. And like, you know, and it's like, and I'm just absorbing the trauma. Like I'm just sitting there absorbing trauma. And that's how I spent a lot of my childhood. So it was tough, you know, it was really tough. And I ended up, you know, I like being in men's meetings because I think, I don't know, I have a lot of anger as a result. Because, you know, if you don't do anything with that stuff, that's where it goes. So at least that's what I think. And I like being around guys because I feel like it's safe around guys to let some of that out. And I don't know, for me, I sometimes I just don't feel safe letting that energy move or talking about some of my feelings around, you know, around women. That's one of the reasons I think this is an important meeting. Because there's a lot of strong, solid recovery, and it's a lot of guys, and I don't know why, but like I need to be around that to get better and to get free of this disease. So, yeah, let me kind of talk a little more. I guess, you know, my parents both grew up in the disease. And I've heard them talk about it to some extent. And my dad, you know, he's an alcoholic, but he never drank in the house, and there was never any alcohol allowed in the house, at least not that I remember. So there was a lot of shame around it already by the time I figured out what was going on. And he wasn't allowed to ever drink around us or around my mom. And so he would, when he drank, he would leave town and he would drink for a few days and he'd be gone. And it was usually after a big blow up, you know, he would just stuff it away for as long as he could, and he would get more irritated and more angry. And then eventually he couldn't do anything else with it, and he would just pop and he would do something, you know, mean to my mom, and he felt terrible about it. You know, he's ashamed of the whole thing. He's ashamed of his own alcoholism. He's ashamed of his anger. And that, you know, and I'm sure that's probably what he learned from his dad too, who was an alcoholic and a workaholic. And so that was, you know, that was like the guy around. I mean, one thing I want to say is both my parents are still together, and they worked hard to stay together, and they worked hard to have, you know, to have a house and to stay with us and to be around. You know, my dad had an office job, and he went into business for himself, and he took some big risks, and he worried and worried and worried about these risks he was taking with, you know, he's a big worrier about money. But he wanted to be there for us, and he wanted to be around the house, and he was sick of going to the office all the time and never being around, you know. So he made, you know, he took big risks and big sacrifices so that he could be around for me. And, you know, it's good for me to remember stuff like that. Like, you know, we come here to Al-Anon and we tell our story, and it's good to get real. It's good to get real about what happened and how exactly how it was. But, you know, I've got enough years to start to really have more compassion and have it be like authentic too, compassion for my parents that I actually buy into. You know, we talk about like fake it till you make it here. You know, take what you like and leave the rest. For me, it's like I'd rather not fake it anymore because I spent a lot of my childhood faking it. So I'd rather learn how to be mad at people that I'm mad at directly, like particularly my parents. If I don't want to see them, I'd like to be able to tell them that. I'd like to be able to tell them why, you know. That's a lot of work. You spent your whole life like stuffing it down. That's not easy. Like, how do you start being honest with people and looking them in the eye and saying things that I think I'm not supposed to ever say or feel, you know? And now I'm going to say them to like the two people who raised me. Like, that's, or, you know, the two people that honestly, before I got into this program, the two people that I'm scared of the most. And I honestly don't feel that way anymore, but I remember that was like a realization I had the first few years of program. It's like, I'm more scared of my parents than anyone else in the world, and I didn't even know why, really. I guess it's just because I saw so much, like, you know, all that trauma was because of them, all the fighting and that stuff, that really hurt me, and like, so in a way, they had the power to hurt me more than anybody else. So it was like a vulnerability I didn't want to be vulnerable like that. I didn't want them to see that I was affected by what happened, that I was affected by the disease, you know, that I cared about any of it, really. I didn't want to feel that. I didn't want them to see it. It's too scary. So, I'm jumping around a little bit. So, I'll talk about my mom's family. She grew up in the disease, too. Her dad left when she was very young, like 4 years old. And he didn't come back till she was like 22. And he was a drinker, I know that. And he killed himself shortly after he came back and reconnected with her. He shot himself. So I guess something else, you know, now I'm talking about that, something else I want to bring up is suicide is in my family. And it's just like around. And it doesn't really matter who did it or any of that. It's just like around, you know what I mean? Like in some families, probably in some of our families because of all this disease and all this hurt, like it's just something that can happen in my family. And for me, you know, in the other program, I'm only in the one, but in the other program, they I think they talk a little more clearly about how life and death it is over there. And for me, it's life or death in here, you know? And like, I didn't come here to make friends. And I actually, that was exactly what I did not want when I came here. Like, it was so hard. Like, you know, I had like a lot of suspicion and I'm very smart. So I used that my whole life to kind of like see what's really going on here. And like, what is this guy saying? I don't know about that. That doesn't sound right. Constantly like picking it apart. And like, I'm smarter than you and I'm not laughing, just so you know. Like, I didn't think that was that funny, you know. It's like, that, you know, that was my power trip. And that was like, that was a tool. I mean, honestly, that kept me safe. It was like, well, I'm not going to show any weakness. I'm never going to lose control again. Because like, when I lose control, I don't know, this is my perception. I still feel it kind of. It's like, it's interesting. I'm doing some work to kind of unlock old memories. And something happened when I was a kid where it was like, I was totally open. And I got attacked from up here. And I don't know if anybody else has had memories like that come back. I don't really remember any of the details, but I know it was right here because my body wants to like do that. And it's like, I don't want to be open to an attack like that ever again, you know? Because that one got all the way in. That didn't like, that got all the way in. Like when my heart was open, I got like a dagger, you know? And it's just like, I can't ever allow that to happen. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, this is a little like, I don't know. I hope I'm making sense, but this is kind of what I've come to is like, I got a lot of things happen that I didn't know what to do with, that I couldn't deal with, and I had to protect against. So it's like, even though I'm a sensitive, I'm all heart, you know, like I'm all heart. Even though that's true, like to get by, I had to like get big and get tough, and I had to shut people out, and I had to do this like, you know, suspicion thing where I'm like constantly looking at what's going on in the room, constantly like, I don't want anybody back here. I want to back up until everybody's like, I can see everything, you know? I mean, that's like silly, right? I'm Al-Anon meaning, like, if there's ever a safe place where nobody's going to do anything, it's an Al-Anon meaning. Like in an AA meeting, then you want to look out because people fly off the handle. Yeah, I said it. But, you know, like in an Al-Anon meaning, you just think about it and like scheme about it. No, that's what I do. But I don't know. Yeah, for some reason, for me to feel safe, I want to see everything that's going on. And I want to be awake and alert. I don't want to close my eyes and rest. I don't want to breathe too deep, you know? Like, there's all these things I don't want to do. And I don't want to take big risks. I don't want to laugh too loud. I've noticed that, too. Like, I kind of have I remember Beavis and Butthead. Like, I kind of have a Butthead laugh. And I think it's because it's like, I can keep it in my throat. I'm just like, hey, 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 hey. Like, I'm never going to let it all the way out. I'm trying not to laugh right now. You can hear it. Yeah, there you go. But, you know, I mean, that was like, I just had to, like, do all kinds of things so I could feel comfortable and so I could feel safe. Because it was, I mean, that was kind of it. It's like, I can't keep surviving. Like, after so many things happened that humiliated me, I think really a big fear of mine is being humiliated. It just feels like something I can't survive, you know? After going through that so many times, it's like never again. At some point, I just make a decision like it's never happening to me again. I don't care if I'm not fulfilled. I don't care if I'm not happy. I don't care if like the girl I like, I don't ask out or even talk to. In fact, a lot of the girls I'm really attracted to, I like avoid as much as I can, especially before the rooms, you know. Because it's like if I do that, I'm safe. Like if I do that, I can't get humiliated because I'll never want anything. And that works, you know. This is not like the end of my pitch, but like, you know. Thank you. Good night. I'm like, no, that's safe. That definitely works. It slowly kills me. You know, like I slowly become. I mean, what I realize is like if I keep taking like good impulses that are coming from my heart, that are coming from this higher power who was there even before I got to the rooms. If I keep squashing all that stuff. I slowly start to die. And that's, I think, where suicide in my family, I think that's how it happens, is like you slowly start killing all the life that's coming up in you. And then eventually it's like, you know, it stops being so symbolic and starts being like, when are we doing this and how, you know? So for me, I've always had a sense that I was really close to death, really close to suicide before I got here. And, you know, it's like, I don't know how it would have happened, but I just know I was like, I was heading in that direction. And I was in the amount of pain that you need to be in to do something like that. And it's real, you know. This is a real thing for me. So if you're in a lot of pain and you're new, or even if you're in a lot of pain and you're not new, I guess what I want to say is, like, you know, I love you. And that's a great place to start. That's a great place to start. You know, even if you've been through the steps, man, if you do step one in some pain, you go a lot lower. You get down underneath some more stuff and you do, like, you know, you go through the steps and you start real low. You get some really foundational things sorted out and cleaned out. Some real pain gets sorted out when you start with, you know, start on your knees. That's kind of how I had to come in. So I talked a little bit about mom and dad. And, one thing I want to say about my dad is he grew up in a family where you couldn't show any emotion. So there was the alcoholism thing going on, but there was also the, you know, so I want to keep it about principles and not personality. So I want to talk about, like, ethnicities of my two parents. But, you know, he came from a background where, yeah, it was very straight-laced. You couldn't show emotion. And even when you were physically sick, you were supposed to deny that you were sick and pray. And you're never allowed to talk about being sick. You're not sick. Pray and go to school, something like that. And so he grew up in that. A lot of that denial of how you're feeling, physically and otherwise. You know, so emotionally, he wasn't allowed to feel anything. Physically, he wasn't allowed to feel anything. And he was really neglected. And, you know, I'm a really sensitive guy, so I could sense that immediately. Like, all when I was growing up, I could sense that. Always could sense that. And with my mom, she was the oldest daughter in a kind of in a household with no head of household, with a really abusive aunt and her mom. You know, her dad was gone, like I said, and her mom was working all the time. She was busy. She had to support the house, so she had this like aunt that was mean. And I've met this woman. She's gone now, but she was just mean and abusive and sick. You know, and she just abused the hell out of these kids. And nobody was protecting them. And my mom made it all work, you know. She protected her kids. She kept the household in order. She managed everything, you know. So she's, you know, she's kind of the, I don't know if there's a classic Alan, but, you know, she's a high-performing, like, organized, fix-it, manage-it, hyper-vigilant, all that stuff, you know. And she's also one of the sweetest women you'll ever meet. Like, she's unreal. She's a beautiful woman. She's got a huge heart. And she was a great mom. And she, you know, even in her denial, she was able to connect with me and let me feel some things that I really needed to feel and I didn't know how to feel. And she was great at that, you know, because my dad, like I said, was pretty shut down. He couldn't really talk about that stuff because he couldn't feel it in himself, so he couldn't really help me feel it, you know. And my mom was a big ally of mine when I was growing up. And, you know, it gets confusing because she's in program now. She's got 22 years in Al-Anon. And, yeah, 22 years. And, you know, she, I lost my train. Oh no, it's happening. No. The humiliation's around. Yeah. My mom, I can't remember what I was going to say. Anyway, my mom's sweet. She's got a big heart. And, I remember what I was going to say. So, like, we kind of got to a point where, you know, she wasn't getting some stuff from my dad that she needed, and she started getting it from me. She started turning me into kind of a husband. You know, luckily, that I remember, at least, it was never physical, but or sexual, I should say. But, you know, it was like she talked to me about things that I didn't need to hear about, that I really wasn't ready to hear. I was way too young to be hearing about it. And, you know, it got really enmeshed, or whatever you want to call it. Like, it got too close. There was too much going on, too much that I was hearing. And I was really dependent on her because, like I said, my dad was kind of gone. He was abusive. And she was programming me that he was the problem, too, and that he's bad and he's to be avoided and he's the problem with everything, you know, because that was going on. That was her disease. So it's like I'm this kid who has, you know, nobody in the world who can understand. I'm terrified of all adults, terrified of adults. I was always a great student, but I never knew any of my teachers and never wanted to. And I remember, like, until I was about 24, I couldn't really hold eye contact with adults. Like, if I would have walked in here when I was young, it would have been a lot of, like, you know, hi, hey, Willie, how you doing? Great, yeah, it's good to meet you. It's like, I don't want anything to do with adults. Because I don't, you know, because, like, I just, there's too big of a wild card. Like, I don't know what's going to happen around adults. Like, with kids, I can kind of play it by ear and figure it out. But, like, with adults, they, you know, you never knew. At least that's the way it was in my house. Like, that was where the threat was the adults. So don't tell them anything. If they talk directly to you, don't be rude and not look. You got to look back. But, like, otherwise, don't look. Like, don't even look. That's how I grew up. Like, it was a war zone, you know. So when I was nine, I think it was when I was nine, my mom got into Al-Anon. And that was a big deal. You know, I think my dad got sober. Well, so my dad's not an AA, but he is sober. He's been sober for like 15 years. And I think he went to AA briefly around then. You know, I was young, so I'm not 100% sure. But anyway, she got into Al-Anon. And then she brought me, I noticed immediately that something was changed, like something was different. You know, they say like when we, what do they say? Like, I wish I had the word, but like in any event, you know, when we work our program and bring it home, like the family is bound, you know, the family situation is bound to improve as we apply these Al-Anon ideas, right? So true. Because my mom started to, I mean, this was, you know, very early, the first couple months of the program, but she started to apply the principles and listen in the meetings and come home, and the fight started sounding differently, immediately. Because she wasn't fighting back and she wasn't taking the bait. My dad, when he's mad, he needs to get his anger out, right? He needs to get it out because he was never allowed to get it out. You know, growing up, stuff it. At work, stuff it. You know, like, plays tennis. Like, why are you so angry? Okay, I got to stuff it when I'm playing tennis, too. It's like, when are you going to get it out, right? Mom, that's one. Go find mom and, like, ask her what she bought today. Like, what did you, you know, I see you went shopping. What did you buy? And like, oh, I bought some new shower curtains. Really? How much were they? You know, like, let's talk about that. And then, eventually, it gets to the point of like, how much did you pay? Really? That much? You know, and then here we go. Here comes the fight. You can hear it. You can hear that he wants a fight. And that was how it would go. And you just pick a fight with her. And she would always come back and be like, I didn't, you know, she would try to defend herself. And if you defend yourself, they say, like, what, arguing with an alcoholic is a losing battle. So she would defend herself, and he would just, you know, stoke that flame until it was ready to go and then just explode, you know? And she stopped hitting the ball back, you know? She stopped hitting the ball back. He wanted to play, and she stopped hitting the ball back. And she said, really? I remember the fights were wild, because you could hear my dad was trying to impose his will. He was trying to make her feel bad. He was trying to tap into that, you know, that guilt that she had a lot of, and he knew about. And she would just calmly say, like, you know, I'm really sorry you feel that way. You guys heard that one, right? And never raise her voice and just say, I didn't know, I didn't realize it. Like, that's not how I meant it. That's not how I meant it. She said that a lot. She would never argue and never fight. And eventually, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like a big dumb animal is like looking for somebody to wrestle with. He's just like, come on, wrestle me. Come on, you know, wrestle. And like, if you don't do anything, eventually the animal like moves on and finds another animal to wrestle with. Sometimes you gotta wait a little while. And she just started doing that. And he just had to face his own stuff. You know, it's like, geez, my old solution is not showing up anymore. My wife doesn't want to get beat down anymore. So what am I gonna do? And I don't know, yeah, in any event, her being in program really changed things, like I said, right away, and I noticed it. Like I said, I was like very aware of all that stuff, and I was very aware of all those dynamics that I never could explain, but they were affecting me, you know. And she brought me into, my parents both knew I had big anger problems, and they'd already taken me to a therapist. And I remember that helped, actually. I mean, that was a good tool for me when I was a kid. Just having somebody who, like, yeah, who got it and who wasn't, it was like a third party, you know, that was a big deal. And she took me to a preteen meeting. We were back in Michigan. She took me to this preteen meeting in Michigan. I remember when I walked in, I knew I needed it, you know, like I knew I needed it. So when they talked to me about it, she said, I want you to go to this meeting. And I knew she was saying it for the right reasons, and I knew she loved me, and I knew I needed it. And I, you know, that doesn't change the fact that I wanted no part of it, you know, like I was so scared of that meeting. And I think, I was thinking about that, like coming to this meeting, like part of me really is, a, you know, kind of afraid of this meeting, because in this meeting I stand to gain quite a bit. Because in this meeting I can like, I don't know, there's something here with like this group of guys, strong recovery, people that look and sound like me that I relate to, that I get on like a visceral level. I get you guys, and like I feel like you get me. I stand to like be fulfilled in a way in this meeting that I'm not used to being fulfilled, and that's scary. It's kind of like what I felt like when I was 9. And I was like, I know I need this, and I know this would really help me, and it's, I don't want it. I don't want anything to do with it. You know, it's too much. Because, you know, like I said, my whole game plan was avoid it. Just avoid it. Like, you know, don't even make eye contact with it, let alone go towards it. You know, somebody's talking about in recovery, we go right towards the problem and right towards the pain, and then we come out on the other side. You know, it's like, that takes a lot of courage. Like steps 4 through 9, that's a lot of courage. Just look, just even looking at it, just a glance. That's, you know, that's a big deal. And we all, you know, I heard something in a meeting that's helpful, and I think I'll repeat that, you know, 99% of the world is not trying to really get any better at being who they are. And there's nothing really wrong with that. I'm not saying like, wow, we're so much better than them. But it is really exceptional that we're here like working on ourselves and trying to take a look at what we're doing in the world and trying to take a look at our relationships and actually get better. I think it's cool, you know? And I'm proud to do, I'm proud that I do that, and I'm proud that like I'm in a community that does that, and it takes a lot of courage, and it's scary, and it's not easy. But we do it, and we all do it. And it's exceptional, you know? I think it's exceptional. So, where was I? Oh yeah, that preteen meeting. So I was walking into that room, and the woman asked me, you know, my mom went to meetings in the other building, and the woman asked me, who are you? And I said, you know, I didn't look at her. And I was like, she was shorter, she was probably as short or shorter than me, too. This woman was tiny, and I still had to, like, get lower than her so I could not look, you know? And I was just like, oh, my mom's Mary Jane, she's in the other meeting, you know? Like, I'm sleepy, or I got something in my eye, and I can't talk right now, you know? And I just said that my mom's Mary Jane, she goes to the meetings or whatever. And then she said, no, I asked who you were. And then it was like, boom, you know, she just went straight towards me. And it was loving. It wasn't like she was trying to call me out, but she said, you know, I asked who you were. And I was like, whoa, you know, I mean, it was just like, boom. And I immediately started crying because it was like, she's talking about something different. You know, she wants to know. She actually wants to know. And it's kind of like exactly what I was afraid of is what presented itself to me as soon as I got there. Is like somebody loving me and seeing me. And it was scary. But, I mean, the cool thing is I do some Alateen service now. The cool thing is, like, when we're kids, it's like, you know, we're open. Even when we're not open, we're more open than later in life. You know, there's not as much story. And it's just like, you know, God, I just remember I got so free so fast. I just cried, and I just let it out, and I just told people what was going on. And I worked at least the first 4 steps, because I remember using that 4-step workbook, which is great. I think it's better than our 4-step workbook, for the record. But anyway, I think I was only in that program for like 6 months, you know, at 9 years old. And I got a lot out of it, and I got this relationship with a higher power that I was like, yeah. And I realized that this is what I need, and like I can get what I need here. So I didn't keep going because, you know, I'm 9. Like, I'm not keeping appointments at that age. And I'm just like, I don't know. I have no idea why I stopped going. It's like the best thing in my life, man. So I stopped going and, you know, kept growing up. And I tried to go back. I remembered that it was good. I had that experience, and I was like, this is a good thing for me. I need this. So I always knew that, and I always had a sense I would go back to it. But, you know, you can't even go back when you're not ready. I mean, people say, like, you know, it's not for people who need it. It's for people who want it, right? Like, if you got to get in more pain before you're ready to come in here and work, then get in more pain. And there's no shame in that. You know, like, that's what it takes. You got to be ready. This isn't fun, you know? Like, you can't fake it that long. Like, you try. But, like, if you're not ready to really give your life over to somebody, then don't. You know, like, you're probably just not ready. That's the way I feel about it. And I needed to get in some pain. And I needed to get honest with myself and, like, if I'm not sure, like if I'm taking step one and I'm just not sure about it, like I don't know if my life's really unmanageable, then I need to get back out there and really start trying to manage it and really get into my life and really just step towards it and be like, I can handle this. I'm like, just, you know, I can't, by the way, but like, that's what, for me, that's what it takes, you know? Like, don't pretend, like, I got to be honest with myself, and I got to be honest in my program, because like I said, my disease is a lot about lying to myself. It was a lot about lying to myself and lying to people around me. So it's like, if I'm not ready, I got to just really own that I'm not ready. You know, I had a sponsorship experience recently where I was like, I'm not going to do this. I'm just not. And I just had to be honest about it. And I kept trying to lie to myself and to this guy. And, you know, it's like not the end of the world, but it is the truth. You know, it's like I want, that's one of my defects, by the way, is I want things. Like I want to do this, but I don't actually want to do it. And I get stuck there a lot because I think I should want to, you know. I think, well, we're here. This is Al Anon. I should want to. I don't know. For me, I just got to get free of that. Like, I got to drop that one because it doesn't serve me. It doesn't get me any closer to this higher power. So, yeah. So anyway, I tried to come back in as a teenager, and I didn't want it. And I tried to come back in college, and like, there's too much going on. I could skip class, and I could sleep in, and I could drink. You know, like, I'm not an alcoholic, but drinking's as good as the next thing, you know. If you don't want to feel something, drinking will take care of that. Like, so will sex, so will video games, so will food. So, like, just not sleeping. For me, not sleeping helps. Helps me not feel anything, not be in my body, you know. So, like, in college, there were way too many distractions, and there's no, you know, it was like before I had to start paying my own way. So I could still just skate by and manage my pain out here, you know. And then I graduated, you know, and I had a degree that I don't, you know, I mean, I'm not interested in this topic, and I have a degree in it. It was a hard degree to get. It was a very good school, and I busted my butt to get this degree, and it's like, you know, classic on. I'm like, I have no interest in it. I thought I wanted to want that major, you know. But I never wanted it. It's just something, you know. So I got that, and then I, you know, then I get out into the world, and like with this, I don't know, with this degree and this whatever, some of these tools that I have that could get me a pretty good job. Like I get, like, you know, I'm waiting tables, and then I'm working at a, well, okay, how much should I say? I guess I'll do whatever. I took a sales job, and maybe that's too much. I try to really not talk about like what I do or where I did it, or. I took a job that was like outside of my comfort zone that I didn't want, and I took it, you know. And I was miserable. I spent a couple years doing different jobs, and I did really well. I got recruited to this other firm to do the same thing. And then eventually, yeah, I was just like, just so in denial about who I am and what I like to do and everything, like whether I'm tired, like. Something that I forget because I have so many good friends now. Like I've got this whole like two rows of friends from the Valley. I moved out to the Valley. And there's this young people's meeting on Wednesdays in Tarzana. And if you ever, if you're young or young at heart, get there. It's amazing. 8:30 on Wednesdays. And like I've got this whole crew of friends that I really trust and that I feel like they're trustworthy and I feel like I'm trustworthy with them. And before I came in here, I didn't trust any of my friends, you know, at all. And I didn't, you know, and they shouldn't trust me. They should not have been trusting me. The ones that did were foolish, or they saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. You know, some people, you know, we always had these angels around, I think. Like, some people saw the goodness in me. And even when I was being a jerk, you know, some people stuck with me and saw the goodness in me. But yeah, like I said, I just didn't have good friendships, and I didn't show up for the ones that were any good. I just didn't show up for them. Because at some point, I can't show up. If I'm going to be in total denial, and if I'm in pain, and I'm not willing to look at, eventually I just got to stop showing up. You know, I can't keep going forever. Especially if you're really sensitive, like me. Like, it just breaks down, right? I can't grind it out. So, I ended up coming back into the rooms when I was 24. And now I'm 31. And, yeah, I got back in. I was in a ton of pain. I was miserable. And I didn't even remember, like, I went to an AA meeting, and I forgot there was a difference. Like, that's how long it had been since I'd been in the rooms. So I walked into, like, a low-bottom Chicago, you know, West Side AA meeting, and I was like, this doesn't feel right, you know? Like, I don't know. You know, like, I'm here, like, I want to talk about what's really going on, and I know you guys are talking about it, but something's off, and, like, I picked up on it. I was like, right, this isn't Al-Anon. This is AA. So, you know, I found my way to some AA meetings, or some Al-Anon meetings, rather, And I just got plugged in. I started going. I went to a lot of meetings, and I, you know, I was ready. So I was in. I was going to meetings whenever I could, and trying to apply the principles. And you know what? I remembered 1 through 3 from when I was a kid. So I was like, there was not a lot of resistance for me in 1. I was like, yeah, I wouldn't be here if step 1 weren't true. Like, I'm not here because I got it figured out or any way to, like, get through my life anymore. Like, I am done. Like, 1's about just admitting what? That I don't have the power I need. I just don't have it. And I like 1, too, because it says, like, not only do we not have enough power, we have none. Like, we're powerless. Like, that's great. Because, like, that makes things so easy. I think, really, if I work 1, like, the rest of these steps are easy. What could be hard if you're really solid in 1? Like, what could be hard about 2 or 3 or 4? It's like, I have no power, right? Like, I virtually have, like, no business even, like, trying to manage my life or figure anything out ever again. How could I have no power, you know? So, I mean, that's good. Like, people talk about how bad step 1 is and how hard it is. I think it's really great. I mean, it allows me to just, like, you know, I mean, you gotta, like, whatever, like, be real about it. But, like, in a lot of ways, it allows me to just shirk a lot of responsibility that was never mine to begin with, that I've been taking on my whole freaking life. It's like, oh, okay, right. Like, all I have to do is show up for stuff. I don't even have to, like, worry about how I feel, and, like, I don't have to, you know, it's like, all I do is show up. And if it goes terribly, that's fine. Like, that's not even my job. I just show up. You get fired from a job, it's like, all right, well, then, great, you know, what's next? Like God made a decision that I need to get fired from a job or something, so then, sweet, like, I'm a soldier, I just show up. I'm not that smart, you know, I don't have that much power. I'm just like a, you know, an instrument. Like, I'm, you know, speaking tonight, it's good, like, I was nervous. I've been nervous for, like, a month about speaking here. And I'll be honest, too, is like, I don't know if it was nervous or just, like, excited, because when I grew up, anything that felt like that was like fear or nervous or angry or something, you know? Because, like I said, all I wanted to do was not feel stuff. And now I think I confuse nervousness. I think I confuse excitement for fear. And it's like, I'm excited. I love this meeting, and I'm excited to speak here. And, like, this is great. But, like, my body's like, oh, we're afraid, you know? Because, like, my body doesn't know. It's used to that being fear. Fear feels like this, you know? And now excitement is similarly like this. It's like something's happening, and, like, I'm feeling a lot. Doesn't mean it's bad anymore. So it's good for me to, like, check in with you guys about stuff. And people, I remember I was here last week, and a couple people were just like, oh, you're nervous, it means you care. It's like, right, I'm nervous because I care. Like, if I didn't care, there's no risk, you know? And if I didn't have something to gain, or if God wasn't telling me to be here, then, you know, there'd be no reason to be nervous. But God was telling me to be here, and God, you know, told Evan to ask me to be here. So it's like, something's going on. I don't need to understand any of it. I just need to feel what I'm feeling and show up and, like, stay with this guy, you know? Is that 40 minutes? That's awesome. Already 40 minutes through. So I guess I'll wrap up. Jeez, man. Any questions? I feel like I covered it all. But that was pretty good. So what I want to say, I mean, so anyway, I came back into the rooms. What do I do? What do I do in the rooms? It took me a while to start to want the fellowship part. I didn't think I needed other people. I was kind of scared of other people. And I also thought, when I came in, you know, if you're a newcomer, you might relate. I just thought, like, these people are just like, I got friends, okay? I don't need friends. That's not why I'm here. You know, like, I was really adamant about that. Like, I'm here because I got a problem, okay? You guys need to shape up, you know? This isn't some social hour, you know? Like, I was like that. I didn't get it that, like, fellowship was part of the solution. I thought it was, like, an excuse for people who couldn't make friends. Like, can we also do some friendship, too? I didn't, you know, like, my eagle eyes were like, something's not right about that. And now it's like, I do as much as I can. I spend time with you guys, and I, you know, like, I roll with the huge posse to these meetings. Because, like, why not, you know? Like, why not ask for help? I'm nervous. Hey, will you guys drive over there with me? Now there's, like, 9 of us. And, like, will you guys come sit on either side of me so that when Chris gets up here and bumbles through my introduction, like, I got, like, 2 guys on other sides of me who's, like, love me. And it's like, that's good stuff. I'm just kidding, Chris. That's great. I thought, man, it's really great. And Chris is one of my best buddies, man. It's like, obviously God's in control, because, like, I walked in and Chris is leading the meeting. He's like, I feel like you're my best friend in the meeting. And he's the guy leading it. Like, what's going on here? That's, like, step 2 proof, evidence, if you need it. I didn't come up with that. And so what else do I do? I want to talk about like tools, right? I make a lot of calls, especially early on. I called people like all the time. I had a lot of numbers on my phone. I would just call and like I asked people if I could leave voicemails. So I would just call and like do the 2-minute share that I would do in a meeting if I were in a meeting into their voicemail. And we would just listen to each other's shares, you know. Because I need people to witness what's going on, and I need to get it out from inside my head and like break, like all day I need to be breaking that isolation, because I think Al-Anon, that disease is a lot about isolation. So I need to constantly be breaking that isolation and not let it just creep in. It kind of creeps in and suddenly I'm really constricted and I feel really tight and I feel really alone and I start to feel like grief and I start to feel pressure. You know, I'm at work and I feel a lot of pressure and I can't even tell you why. But it's usually just because I haven't been breaking that isolation and my disease is gaining ground. You know, like disease is, it doesn't sleep, you know, it's coming. I mean, that's whatever. That sounds a little fearful, but you know what I mean? Like, it's a, you know, like a daily reprieve, like we talk about in the other program. Like, I got to do the work every day, because it's, if I don't, if I go to sleep on this whole thing, like, it's coming. It wants me, you know, and this is, and like I told you, my disease wants me dead. It doesn't want me, like, miserable. It wants me in the ground. So I try to just, like, remember that and remember that, like, God wants me alive, all the way alive. You know, wants me happy and wants me fulfilled. And if I'm scared, that's probably God saying, go ahead. You know, go ahead, pal. This is it. You're going to be fine. You're going to be great. You know, that's how God sounds. And another tool I used early on a lot was to decipher God's will from my will. It was just listening to the way it sounded. Like, when God's talking to me, it's not urgent. You know, they say if it's important, it's not urgent. If it's urgent, it's not important. So, like, if I think it might be a message from God, if it's, like, urgent, and there's a timeline to it, it's probably not God. And if it's not loving, or if there's any drama to it, it's probably not God. God's always like, dude, you're awesome. Get out there, you know. Have fun. That's what God sounds like. So, I'm grateful to be here. I love you guys, and... You know, I need this room, so thanks for having me.